Welcome to Slash Film Daily, the daily podcast of SlashFilm.com. I'm Peter Shredda, and on today's episode for July 18th, 2017, we'll be discussing a bunch of movie news, including Neil Blomkamp and Elysium 2, Kermit the Frog, Rian Johnson debunking a Star Wars fan theory, a Robotech movie coming, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes. Joining us today is Bradford Oman, who you know as Ethan Anderton on SlashFilm.com. Brad, how's it going?
It's great, because I'm actually here in SlashFilm headquarters as opposed to across the country in my home.
Yes, because once a year we all gather to go to San Diego for Comic-Con, and you have come out the night before, and we're going to drive down tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we're recording this actually the day before you're hearing this. Before we get into the news, Brad, have you been doing anything interesting lately? Have you seen anything interesting?
I did. I saw a couple of interesting things, if you will. I mean, technically it's one interesting thing, but it's still very cool because it was two different shows. Mystery Science Theater 3000 has been doing their first live show. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, wait a minute, I'm sure Mystery Science Theater has toured before. They haven't. Riff Tracks has done tours before, and some of Mystery Science Theater has done it. But this is the first time there's been like an officially sanctioned Mystery Science Theater 3000 tour. And they have Jonah Ray out there with the show. They have Tom Servo and Crow T-Robot. Joel Hodgson introduces the show, and thankfully, since I live in the Chicago area, I was able to catch both of the shows that they're touring with. One of them is a screening of EGA, which is one of the fan favorite episodes of MST3K, and they added a bunch of new jokes, and it was absolutely hilarious. And it's even funnier to see them do it live too, because they riff every now and then, and just the interaction between Jonah and the puppets is hilarious. And then they had the Secret Surprise film, which was the second show that followed. And I won't tell you what it is because everybody has done a really good job of keeping the secret as to what it is, so fans are surprised when they see it. But suffice it to say,
it is... Oh, so it's the same one at every show?
Yeah, it's the same movie. Because otherwise they would have to write so many shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a hilariously awful movie, as you would expect. I'll describe it as being in the same vein as like a 1966 Batman movie, but made in Italy and much more perverse and weird.
Well, speaking of Batman, Brad, I just got back from seeing Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk.
With Batman?
Well, no, he directed the Batman, the last Batman trilogy.
Oh, I was hoping Batman was going to be in it.
I mean, sitting there in the movie theater, I was hoping Batman was going to show up.
Whoa, that sounds mean.
You know what? The movie is good. It's not great. I did not love it. There's so much I admire about it. The cinematography is beautiful. It's stunning. The sound design is incredible. There's, you know, sequences in this that are really on the edge of your seat. All that said, oh, and the acting's good. Tom Hardy does stuff with his eyes. You just see the eyes and as a fighter pilot. Most actors couldn't relay that kind of emotion and that kind of acting just through the eyes. But, I really didn't love it. The movie, like most Christopher Nolan movies, plays with time. It is told with three different stories that are taking place in different kind of times that intersect. And this is something that's set up very early in the film, like within the first minutes. So this isn't a spoiler, but it comes off as very confusing in the film. And to me, it took me out of it. Any time that I was really getting into it, I got jolted back out because I was just not enjoying it as much as I should have been. And the Hans Zimmer score, which I loved in the IMAX preview. Did you see the 5-minute IMAX preview?
Yeah.
I loved it there. In the whole movie, it's like that. And it gets kind of repetitive and grueling. Anyways, that's my quick review of Dunkirk. Let's move on to the news, though. So first up in the news, Brad, Neil Blomkamp is doing interviews because he's promoting his short film initiative with his new studio, and he was asked about Elysium, his second feature film, right?
Yeah.
After he was coming off District 9, which is so strong. And he did Elysium, and critics hated it. Audiences didn't like it. Neil Blomkamp says, Elysium is something, it's, quote, something I feel like I could have done better. I think that if you were to take something like Elysium and play it inside the setting of this, talking about his Oates studio for short films, you probably would be able to hone it better. And later he says, I just think I can do a better job in setting up what the themes are more clearly and what the characters' motivations are. I think I can do better, I think. He says he would love... Wait, where is it? The idea of separation of class warfare presented in the space ring is incredibly appealing to me, and I would love to go back and make another movie in the world of Elysium because it's compelling. What do you think about that? Do you want to see Elysium 2? Does anybody want to see it?
I don't necessarily want to see Elysium 2, but I think that the idea of setting a movie in the same universe that movie takes place in could be interesting, as long as it's not an overt connection that tries to continue the story or has something necessarily that's like tangential and connects to what we saw in the first movie. But I think that the world that Blomkamp sets up in there is one that's maybe fascinating enough to plan. As far as like his discussion about his approach to the themes of the movie and like class warfare and that kind of thing, I think the biggest problem with Elysium and even Chappie is that he, unlike District 9, he wasn't exactly very subtle about the themes in the movie as far as social commentary and that kind of thing. Like, District 9 isn't, you know, the most, you know, nuanced presentation of the themes in that movie as far as immigration and racism and that kind of thing. But it definitely works a lot better than the what he tried to present as commentary in his following two movies. So I'm not sure. I mean, part of me wonders if Neil Blomkamp is kind of like a one-hit wonder kind of filmmaker. I hope he's not, but...
I kind of agree. I love the setup of that world. The setup of that world was great, but by the end of the movie, it felt like a video game. Like, it felt like in the themes... I think Neil Blomkamp is admitting that he did not succeed at what he wanted to do. But I think there were some themes there that could have been cool, but they weren't executed quite well enough. Also in the news, we told you last week that the actor who has played Kermit the Frog for the last nearly 30 years, 27 years, Steve Whitmire, he's played Kermit the Frog since Jim Henson died. He was fired by Disney. And or at least at first we heard he was he had left. And he was being replaced. Then we heard he was fired. And Steve Whitmire wrote a blog post saying he hopes he could one day come back to the role. And now we're hearing more about this. He did an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. We wrote it up on slashfilm.com. And basically, Whitmire says that there was two issues that they clashed over. One of them was that that they felt he had been disrespectful in outspoken on character issues. And this especially came into play with the Muppets TV show that they just had on ABC. Apparently they had like the scene where Kermit was going to lie, and he was vehemently I am the custodian of Kermit, and Kermit would not lie in this situation. And kind of like fought against the studio. And I guess that was one of the reasons he says. The other was this union thing that doesn't seem as interesting to talk about. A spokesperson for the Muppet Studio fired back saying, quote, "The role of Kermit the Frog is an iconic one that is beloved by fans, and we take our responsibility to protect the integrity of the character very seriously. We raised concerns about Steve's repeated unacceptable business conduct over a period of many years, and he consistently failed to address the feedback. The decision to part ways was a difficult one, which was made in consultation with the Henson family and has their full support." Period. So, a lot of Muppet fans are kind of pissed that, you know, he left, but there's two sides to every story, Brad. What side do we believe here?
I mean, it sounds like more and more that maybe Disney was in the right here. It maybe that Steve wasn't the easiest guy to work with. But then again, I mean, what's the straw that broke the camel's back that after 27 years, Disney just, like, had enough? Like, was it really the Muppets TV show where, like, you know, that all of a sudden, like, okay, we can't work with anymore after all those years? I don't know. Maybe there's more to the story than even they're letting on. Yeah. But it's definitely a bummer still.
I definitely feel like there's more to the story. It's a bummer that, you know, this guy that has kind of been the custodian of this character for almost my entire life, since Jim Henson died, is now, you know, that either he has been wronged or that he is a shitty guy. Either way. And next up in the news is Rian Johnson shooting down a popular Star Wars fan theory. A lot of fans have been speculating that Benicio del Toro's mysterious character in Star Wars The Last Jedi might actually be Ezra Bridger from Star Wars Rebels, which is an interesting idea. I mean, why not bring some of the Star Wars Rebels characters into the live-action world? I know they tried to do that with Rogue One to some limited failure. But, you know, it'd be cool to see them actually in the saga films. But Rian Johnson was asked this by Good Morning America, and he kind of shot down the theory, saying that he is his own person. So, who do you think DJ... They keep on calling him DJ.
Yeah, but they've said that that's what they call him, like, on set. Like, it's not his real name. And they say... Rian Johnson says it does stand for something, but he won't say what, though he does say it doesn't stand for disc jockey. So, I'm not really sure. I think he's one of the, like, most mysterious characters that's going to be in The Last Jedi, because we don't know anything about him. Like, we don't even know his name. We know what he looks like.
Yeah.
And we know that he's on a spaceship at some point. But otherwise, like, I really have no idea what kind of character.
Yeah, and we saw a little bit of him on the Star Wars Last Jedi sizzle reel that was released at D23. Wrote an article on Slashfilm.com.
I did.
Which analyzed the whole sizzle reel frame by frame, and you picked out, you know, some of the stuff that people might have missed. So
yeah,
why don't you tell me what might I have missed in that sizzle reel?
So one thing you might have missed is a character that we've heard about but we didn't actually see until the sizzle reel. There's one shot of a resistance gunner who is in like a little gunner pod that has, you know, the barrels of the gun sticking out of it. And it looks like it's in one of those ships that we see in the teaser trailer in one of the big space battles that will happen in the movie. And that character is actually Paige Tico, who is Rose Tico's sister. And Rose Tico is the new character that's being played by Kelly Marie Tran in The Last Jedi. And she is a resistance gunner. And she apparently at one point in the movie gets... coached by Poe Dameron as far as, like, you know, what she needs to be doing as a gunner. And the reason that we know that that's her is because if you look at the helmet that she's wearing in the shot, the design on it matches a Lego minifigure of that character that comes with that ship that she is the gunner for.
And almost everything, all the rumors and leaks to come out of the Star Wars saga movies always originate in toy form, in one way or another.
Now, one thing
and that actress is Veronica Ngo.
Right. Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
One thing that I speculated on, I don't know if it's true or not. You can see in the article is there's another shot in the trailer that doesn't happen sequentially within the edit of the sizzle reel, where there's a character falling down a strange trench of sorts, where there's where they're surrounded by these strange orbs, and I don't know what this area is or anything like that, but the character is wearing a pilot jumpsuit that is just like the one that Paige is wearing. So part of me wonders if maybe this is a scene where Paige dies, and that's kind of what gives Rose the fire to continue fighting with the resistance, because Rose is just a maintenance worker, but she ends up going on a mission with Finn in The Last Jedi. So I wonder if she's kind of out for, you know, not necessarily vengeance, but maybe just to, you know, dish out back some, you know, justice to the First Order for killing her sister. That I don't know if she even dies, but that's just speculation on my part.
And that's such a visually interesting shot. When I saw it first on the big screen, I thought it was a bunch of Imperial, like, probe droid-like things. But now that you see the shot of it, it looks like they're... I don't know what they are.
Yeah, I really don't know.
But it's visually striking, and it almost looks like something out of the Matrix. So what else did we might may we what else might we have missed in this sizzle reel?
One of the things that I think is particularly cool in this sizzle reel is the stuff that we see with Luke and Rey. And if you look at some of the scenes that don't look like they're in the movie because they are training scenes, I think that we get an indication of who they'll be fighting, or at least how many people they'll be fighting at certain points. There's one particular shot of Rey where she's holding her prop lightsaber and she's fighting against three different stuntmen. Now, the stuntmen aren't holding any specific weapons. They're just fighting her with staffs, but all three of them come at her at the same time. I wonder if maybe there's a sequence where Rey fights the Knights of Ren, or if maybe she's just fending off the stormtroopers who have those new claw weapons that might be able to also fight lightsabers the same way that that electrified baton did from The Force Awakens.
And one other thing in here that I wanted to ask you about is these new little creatures. They're cute. What are they?
Apparently, they're called porgs. Or it could be porges, but I think it's porgs. And they're these little, like, puffy birds that reside on Octu, which is the planet that Rey finds Luke on at the end of The Force Awakens. And apparently, they considered themselves, like, protectors of the island. And I guess they have a bond with Luke because he's been there for so long. But they're not too keen on Rey yet. Like, I guess she has to prove herself or something like that. So yeah, it's kind of unclear as to like how significant they are and if maybe they're force sensitive or anything like that, but apparently they look cute on the outside, but I guess they have these like sharp little teeth.
Yeah.
Like gremlins.
Like gremlins. Well, they certainly look interesting. They look like the kind of characters that could be divisive as the Ewoks were in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, and real quick, to go back to the training fight shot scene, there's another shot of training choreography happening with Adam Driver, where he is fighting two stuntmen attacking him with staffs, which could indicate that both Luke and Rey will fight Kylo at the same time.
Hmm. Well, anyways, head to slashfilm.com to check out this whole article with all the images, all the speculation, all the breakdown. Let's move on in movie news. Andy Muschietti, I think? Muschietti?
Sounds right.
Yeah. He is directing the new It, the adaptation of Stephen King's It. He has signed on, and he's also the guy that directed Mama.
He was once going to direct The Mummy. But yes, that didn't happen,
and that's he's better for it. He's now signed on to direct a live-action adaptation of the 1980s anime series Robotech for Sony. This is Robotech has been in the works for so long. I remember Leonardo DiCaprio, like probably 10 years ago, when I first started his last film, was trying to get this off the ground and couldn't. Now it is with the guy that did Mama and the upcoming It. I don't have any really ties to Robotech. I know you don't either, but it's one of those shows with giant robots, and it was, you know, taken from what I've heard, a better show that was broadcast in Japan and repurposed, kind of like Voltron or Power Rangers or any of the stuff that we steal and then make our own. Do you think that this is that he could be the right person for this movie?
I don't know. It's tough to say. We haven't really seen him do anything like this. I guess it would depend on the approach. Maybe it seems to be something that he's passionate about if he's interested in taking on the project. So maybe he has an angle that would finally make it work on the big screen and actually make it happen.
He's a very visual director. I loved his short for Mama, even more than Mama itself. And Mama was produced by Guillermo del Toro. He's a mentor of him. And it's interesting that he's kind of taken the same path that del Toro did, where del Toro was doing these like kind of horror movies and then jumped into Pacific Rim. And this is essentially going to be Andy's Pacific Rim, I think. Anyways, we'll have to see if this actually gets made. There's been a billion people that have been attached to this over the years, so I kind of am skeptical of it actually happening. And lastly, in our spoiler room segment, this isn't really a spoiler, but it's discussion for War for the Planet of the Apes, which you have seen, right?
Yep.
And this is something that got cut from the movie. So you can feel free to tune out now if you don't want to hear it, but it's not something that's actually in the movie and it's not something that affects things. But it's basically a reference to the previous films that was cut. And now we're going to talk about it. What it was is originally Jason Clarke's character Malcolm from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? Mm-hmm. Yes. Was originally mentioned in the movie. There was a scene between Caesar and the Colonel, played by Woody Harrelson, who I think it was revealed that he had come across a man that had told him about this ape who is not just an ape but a great leader, and he tells the story, the colonel's telling the story, that he thought this guy was crazy, and basically Caesar asked him what happened to that man, and the colonel says, "I killed him." And Caesar is perplexed and asks why, and the colonel says, "His ideas were very dangerous because the ideas were like a virus and they could spread to others. And right now, this is a fight for humanity." So that's how it was cut from, or that was the scene that was in the films. And that was Matt Reeves told that to the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast.
I don't think it was ever actually in the film. I think it was, he said it was in an earlier
cut. Yeah, earlier cut of the script. Sorry, yeah. I am mistaken. I'm actually kind of glad that this wasn't in there, because I feel like as much as I would have liked some reference to what happened to the characters we left, this feels like it would have felt forced. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it definitely feels contrived, at least in the way that it's explained. I imagine that like the exchange between Caesar and the Colonel wasn't quite so stilted or awkward as it's explained here. I think that he's just paraphrasing what the scene generally would have been about. But yeah, it feels like, you know, an unnecessary reference and connection to make when you don't really need to know what happened to Jason Clarke's character, because he was already, you know, walking away from the fight because there was, you know, a big battle coming and Caesar didn't want, you know, them to have to be a part of it. So I think it's much better that we don't know what happened to them.
I agree. And, you know, I do like the callback with James Franco's character in Dawn for the Planet of the Apes. But that felt more organic with Caesar returning to his former home, which is the house. And I feel like, this definitely, at least on surface level, feels kind of crammed in there. Unlike, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes had some kind of references, some of very obvious references. Like, didn't Draco like say, "You damn dirty apes," or whatever?
Who?
Draco Malfoy, or whatever his name. Yeah, Tom Felton.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just call him Draco.
He did say, "Get your hand off me, you damn dirty."
Yeah, ape. Yeah.
And then there was Caesar, who was building a 3D puzzle of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. So they were more obvious with the references in the first film. From what I've heard, Tom Rothman, who was the studio head at the time, wanted those references in there. But
his ideas are usually so good.
Well, he did go over to Sony in the first movie he greenlit was Passengers. So that happened.
Yeah, his ideas are so good.
anyways, okay, so that does it for the news. Brad, we're heading to Comic-Con.
Yeah, we are.
We're heading there right now as you're listening to this, and it's going to start Wednesday night, and we're going to have coverage on the site Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What are you most excited about?
Oh man, that's a big question. I'm always excited for the Marvel panel, obviously, because they put on an insane show, and I'm interested to see what they're going to show, because we already know that they showed some stuff at D23. They showed a little bit of Infinity War.
Yeah, my prediction of what Marvel was going to do is what happened at D23. I thought they were going to bring out, you know, almost the entire cast of Infinity War on stage for a photo op and then show a clip. And that's what they did at D23. So I don't know what they're going to do at Comic-Con.
I think they'll still do that at Comic-Con, but they'll have more. We already know that there's a Thor Ragnarok trailer coming. I don't think they'll do another Black Panther trailer because it's a bit too early since the last one came out. But they might show more from Infinity War so that it's not just a repeat of what happened at D23. Though I still hope they show what happened at D23 since I didn't get to see it. but besides that, I think on the TV side of things, I'm really pumped to see what happens with Westworld and Stranger Things.
Yeah, those are my two favorite on the TV side of things. And Warner Brothers will definitely have Justice League, which will be interesting because is Joss Whedon going to show up? Is Zack Snyder going to be there? You know, it's also, actually, you're probably going to mention this in Superhero Bets tomorrow, but Joss Whedon changed his Twitter profile and removed the Justice League photo that was on the background of his Twitter profile, which to me seems very telling.
Joss Whedon said that a while back that he was not coming to Comic-Con this year.
Oh, he did? Okay, yeah. So
unless he's lying, which...
It's possible.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyways, keep it tuned. Where can we find more of your work online, Brad?
I'm writing at Slash Film all the live long day. You can find articles all the time there written by me. You can also find me on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton.
And if we wanted to listen to you, where would we hear you?
Oh, well, I have good news because there's a podcast that I do with my friend Ben, and it's called Go Flix Yourself, FLIX, and it's available on iTunes and various other podcast platforms.
Thank you for listening to Slash Film Daily. Again, we'll be having some coverage from Comic-Con, live from Comic-Con, and this is the first time I'm doing it, so I apologize in advance for the quality. Please send your complaints and praise to peter@slashfilm.com. If you like this podcast, please go review and rate it over at iTunes. That really helps us a lot. And tell your friends, because we can always use some more listeners. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.